Hello and welcome to In Stitches, the upholstery podcast telling your story and inspiring others. Today, I'm delighted to welcome Amy Paynton. Welcome, Amy.
Hello.
This is very exciting because we're doing it face to face and it's the first one I've done like that. So no Zoom involved. Right. So to start off with, as we always do, did you know what you wanted to do when you left school? And if not, what did you want to do?
All through school, I wanted to be a fashion designer. And I used to draw shoes and clothes and sew and make things for my like octopus teddy and stuff like that, knitting, everything. I was definitely going to be a fashion designer until about the age of 14. And then I wanted to be a costume designer.
Right.
Or film costume designer. I was really into the history of clothing. And that was definitely what I was going to do.
Okay. So your career path took you down here. So tell us a little bit about that, because I think it'd be quite interesting to know a little bit more about what you actually did and how you did it.
It's quite a winding path.
That's good. A winding path is always good.
So while I was still at school, I started working in a costume shop.
Yeah.
And they used to have like the sexy nun outfits as you did in the 80s.
Yeah.
Maybe not so appropriate now. And
only at the weekends.
But they also used to make historic costumes for, like, hand-stitched historic costumes for the English Civil War Society and other reenactment groups.
Yeah.
So although they had the commercial side, their passion was the hand-stitched and authentic, in inverted commas, clothing.
Yeah.
So that kind of inspired me. And then when I left school, I went to do Art Foundation in Camberwell. And then I went to Manchester to do to do technical theatre.
Yeah.
Specialising in costumes.
Yeah.
And while I was there, I sort of did lots of things for dance companies and small scale theatre productions and
a lot of different things. Yeah.
But my main passion, went back to the historic costumes. So after I left there, I went to do a master's in the history of design and decorative art.
Okay.
In Brighton. While I was there, I started, my master's was actually back in theatre.
Yeah.
It was at the Globe Theatre.
Fantastic place to work.
It was amazing. So I did my master's on their methodology, looking at paintings and looking at, you know, historic documents, text, looking at the history of a garment from lots and lots of different angles.
Yeah.
And then I started actually working for them, doing research, going to the British Library and looking at the costumes in V&A and doing very historic research so that they could create costumes.
This is all creating a sort of really deep understanding of textiles as well.
While we were at the Globe, we had fabric made on a loom in Genoa from the 17th century, so not quite the right era, but it was, you know, the oldest loom still making velvet.
And I guess it's actually giving you a lot of insight into
amazing. Yeah. So unfortunately that was one day a week, the only job of its kind in the country. So it wasn't particularly a very good career path, so I started looking at other things. Looked at museums because the history side of things, and I ended up working at the Ashmolean Museum in Oxford, in the Eastern Art Department.
What was your job role there? What were you
concentrating? It was administrator.
Okay.
But with my background in the textiles, my wonderful bosses let me, do a couple of exhibitions, do some research, lectures.
So they were still feeding that passion that you've obviously got for that sort of historical garment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, and the textiles. I mean, the textiles is the key thing, really, which obviously,
So what sparked the change? What created you starting to look at upholstery?
I mean, I was at the Ashmolean for 12 years.
Yeah.
In the same role, which I'd sort of expanded as much as I was allowed.
Yeah, yeah.
And things have sort of started changing at the Ashmolean, and those opportunities were not going to be available to me as much as they had been. Mm-hmm. And I just thought it's time for a change, really.
So did you, I mean, fairly obviously, you were always going to end up working with textiles. I think that was a given with you.
Yeah.
But did you automatically think upholstery, or did you look at other avenues? Did you look at other ideas?
Well,
what stumbled across upholstery?
So I'd been doing a leisure class in Oxford.
Yeah.
Before I just started that, I did a couple of things myself.
Yeah.
Which are still going, but pretty rubbish, as you can imagine.
Yeah, but it's still your first piece and you're proud of. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So then I did the leisure class. I did a couple of pieces which were, you know, still going, but not great.
Yeah.
And when I left the Ashmolean, I was looking around for more courses, something that I level up.
Yeah.
And luckily stumbled across Gareth and Greg at the British School of Upholstery Furniture.
Yeah.
And just thought, I'll see where this takes me terms of a profession.
Because there's a direct connection with what you were doing, isn't there? And I'm quite interested, when you were at Oxford Upholstery, whatever that place was you just mentioned, escaped.
It was just a leisure class with a, I can't remember what the name of it was now.
Yeah, but it was just a complete leisure class. It wasn't, okay, fine. The next question is, I really don't need to ask because it's clear that you're passionate about being creative.
Mm.
But is that something you've always had from day one?
Yeah, really. Both of my parents are creative and I come from a very creative family. And I used to go up to the V&A on my own, age sort of 15, catch the bus up there and sketch. I mean, not many 15-year-olds
do that. No, they don't.
So it's always been
there. Yeah, no, that's cool. And so you started working with Gareth and Greg. Tell us a little bit about how you found it. In terms of the physicality and the understanding, were there connections with what you've been doing?
Definitely, and I think the sort of stitching and the fabric manipulation came quite naturally.
Yeah.
So the thing which, you know, is probably my biggest challenge for me is the manipulation of hair.
Yeah.
And I think it's more like sculpture than dressmaking. So that I'm still trying to kind of
perfect. Yeah, well, it's hard. It's the part of the job that I struggle with.
So anyway, that's the fabric side and the stitching I feel very comfortable with. And also the history. I know most students hate writing I love it.
Yeah, but you've got that more academic background. Exactly. Well, no, not that. I think a lot of people that come into it, but it's just a different, you've got a historic connection with it.
Yeah.
Which I guess is fascinating in comparison to what you've already learnt sort of within textiles and garments and so on.
Yeah.
So,
there's so many parallels. Yeah. It's really interesting.
But what about the actual sort of stitching and the webbing? Did that feel quite... Mm-hmm. Was it pretty much what you were expecting?
It's just quite fun to use textiles and a hammer, you know, rather than like a tiny little needle. And so obviously I do the lab shapes as well.
Yes, yeah.
So that's something I do outside of college, chair school.
Tell us a little bit about the lampshades. How did you start making lampshades?
Oh, that is complete accident. My brother bought me a book. And I started making the hard lampshades with PVC backing.
Yeah.
Actually, I did a course with Angela, I can't remember her surname.
I know you mean, and I can't either. Yeah. Sorry. Anyway, we'll wash over that.
So I did a weekend course at British School of Upholstery with Angela, and that was to learn the stitched shades.
Yeah.
And so really from there, from that course, I've developed the other techniques, you know, looking through books.
Yeah.
Historic books.
Of course,
rather than the newer books.
Yeah.
So, I'm still obviously learning
I love
it.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting sort of connection with the upholstery as well, isn't it, I think?
And you look at the tiniest needles, the curved needles that you use for for stitching on braid onto lampshades, and then look at the huge curved needles you use in that upholstery.
Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, just don't get them confused.
No.
Yeah. So what are the things that have surprised you about the craft in terms of how you've fallen into it?
Obviously, you all instantly think of chairs and sofas, and there's so much more.
Yeah.
There's so much more. There's beds, there's the walling that you do.
Yeah.
You know, the boxes, screens,
et cetera.
You know, there's so much to it, and it's much broader than I thought initially.
Yeah. Because it's, I think, one of the things, because there are many facets to the trade, sometimes it's sort of, you've got to really concentrate on what you love doing, haven't you? Because you could get sucked into trying to do too many things instead of concentrating on sort of what floats your boat, for want of a better term. So what are your aspirations? Where do you want to go with this? What's
You know, I think, like a lot of people, the sort of end dream would be a little workshop in the garden. Dog by side. And I'd like, when I have enough knowledge and enough to give, I'd like to teach.
Yeah.
Even, not necessarily AMUSF level, but...
Well, when you've got that experience behind you. Yeah. And tell me, because I haven't asked you, what stage of the AMUSF course are you on at the moment?
Nearly at the end. I'm going to be bereft.
So you're... This is year three, and so when does that...
October.
So you'll be doing, you'll have hopefully this year they'll have a little celebration at the end and awards. Yeah, that'll be nice, won't it?
Yeah, we did miss that last
year. Yeah. It was tough for everyone, wasn't it? So,
So
we always ask the question, what would you pass on to a student?
Mm.
Turning it around, what do you think would be helpful for a student in terms of their development?
So thinking about my stage, so at the end of the 3 years, and listening to your podcast and hearing everybody saying about gaining experience
you know,
beyond the course, I think that really resonates with me. I feel like I've learned so much. It's been a huge learning curve, but actually that experience of making things with somebody else and still having somebody there to ask the questions.
Yeah.
I feel confident that I can do a chair, but just having somebody there to keep your standards high and, you know, keep learning, keep pushing you different directions.
Yeah.
I think
we've talked about this a million times on the podcast, but it is, from my perspective, and God knows what it's like from a student's perspective, it's a very frustrating part of it, because there isn't that next stage to go to. But one day I'm sure there'll be some sort of fix for it.
Mm.
You know, it's getting enough people to believe that students are our future.
Mm.
And I think that's kind of where we need to be with it.
Definitely. It would be really useful if there were more opportunities.
Yeah.
But I mean, the journeyman membership of the of the guild, traditional upholsterers, which I'm the student rep.
Committee.
You know, that is amazing.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because that's quite interesting. And probably worth shouting about. Yeah.
So it's for people who have just finished the AMUSF or have a significant amount of experience behind them, but just want to kind of take it to the next level. Yeah, it's a couple of years. You submit some images of a chair that you've done. Then the wonderful Bruce. Here, everybody loves, will help you on your journey to kind of, basically, the aim is to then become a certificated member.
Yeah.
Where you have to pass the exam.
Yes.
At a certain level.
Yeah.
So the journeyman is about helping people get up to that
standard
level.
Yeah.
Particularly aimed at people who've just done the AMUSF.
Okay. So it's a continuation of your education, but on your own terms, I guess.
Yeah. It's more like a mentorship.
Yeah.
And then I think because it's very new.
We've
only just started. Yeah. Taking memberships.
Yeah.
I think the journeymen who are currently signed up all at a WhatsApp group, and the idea is that they'll meet and they can support each other. Bruce is there. And also I think the idea is that people have a mentor who they can also go to
and
ask questions
and
feel that support.
Yeah. I think that whole mentorship thing is so important, particularly for students, because there is this area where you could find yourself a student, you finish your class. I'm talking generally here, not because I'm sure this is not true for most, but you could find yourself in a position where you've finished, you've got a real passion for the trade, no one to mentor you, you've got no other direction to go in but run your own business. Mm-hmm. And if you've got no one to run ideas off and tell you don't do that because that's a nightmare, you could find yourself in all sorts of problems. And I think this is why that whole mentorship thing is so important.
It's really important.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think looking at the sort of general demographic of a lot of ANUSF students, I'm very generalizing very much here. I think a lot of people are on a second career.
Yes.
And the idea is for they want to work for themselves.
Yeah.
That's why they're doing this.
Yeah.
It's like a lifestyle thing as well as career.
Yeah.
So they probably want to work for themselves.
Yeah.
In the workshop at the end of the garden.
Yeah. I mean, it's the dream. I mean,
exactly. You know, yeah. So, I mean, those people are then sort of chucked out of the ANUS.
Yeah.
Not chucked out either.
Yeah. But they come to a natural end. It's a bit harsh to say that, but yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So booted out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, yeah, they're left to fend for themselves, really.
Yeah, yeah.
So, the guild are there to help people.
Yeah, which is fabulous, I think. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, yourself, how did you get involved with the guild and how did you become sort of the student rep?
Well, Gareth had been the student rep for many years, as well as doing many other things.
Yeah.
As usual, Gareth.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Has a lot on his plate, much like you.
Yeah.
He wanted to give that side of the role up, and he put my name forward and it was accepted.
Yeah.
I think because I'm on a committee of the Oxford Asian Textile Group.
Yeah.
And I was chair of that for 10 years.
Yeah.
So he knows that I'm good
committee woman.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And that I could offer, quite a lot to the committee
there.
It's a much bigger committee, much bigger organisation.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've signed up, I was about 280 students.
Have you really?
In the space of about 3 months.
So how have you gone about that? What's been the process to get this many people interested?
Well, we emailed the AMUSF facilities and just asked them to forward that to their students.
Okay.
And so many people signed up, mostly, I think, because Gareth's doing his lectures.
Yes,
which have been amazing.
Yeah.
At the moment, we're in the process of putting those all on the new website. But you need to be a member because you have to have a password
in order to
get to the
quite
lectures.
Right, too. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we're nearly there, having all of those up.
So it's been quite an interesting sort of little side development for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really love it. And,
yeah.
You know, those guys are great.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a lot of people trying to put stuff back into our trade, and I think they need shouting about as much as anyone else, really.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. I mean, the idea is that we'll have more events in person and things like that. So that would be really nice.
Yeah, it will be. When we can do that again, it would be lovely. It'd be really nice to actually be able to sit down like this and talk to someone face to face and not through bloody Zoom. But there you go. So who inspires you? In terms of upholstery and just in general of you getting into the trade in the first place?
Oh, well, I mean, obviously, Gareth and Greg.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So supportive. Just wonderful craftsmen.
Yeah.
Really, really helpful. So somebody that's a bit sort of off-piste, I guess.
Yeah.
There's a woman on Instagram called, I think it's Froen Brekes. She does traditional upholstery, but uses it for sculptural form.
Yes, okay, yes, yeah.
And I just find it really interesting that you can push
trade
in that direction as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, again, it's expanding what upholstery
I love is. That whole idea of thinking differently about the trade and using the skill in a different way. Mm. I think it's... kind of keeps it exciting and interesting, doesn't it?
Absolutely. You know,
I went to see Katrina Gibb at the weekend, who's also been on the podcast, and she's got a different way of thinking about the construction and how to display it. And because I think there's part of the trade that gets so easily lost is that all of the beautiful stitching and all of the hard work, we slap a cover on it, never to be seen again.
Exactly.
And it's a nice thing if it's, you know, a scene exposed and people can you know.
Well, when I make things for friends and family,
yeah,
that's mostly who I make I always make sure I send them photographs of all the processes.
Yeah.
They can appreciate it as
well. Yeah, I know. It's the part of it that it kind of really bothers me, because obviously the top cover is everything, because the presentation of the top cover, the way it's put on, is everything. But most people wouldn't, you know, most people, I don't want to be too sweeping here, but there's a lot of people that wouldn't see the difference between a chair that's been upholstered traditionally and one bought from IKEA, you know, and it's the more we can try and make awareness of that, I think the more people will identify with the fact that it doesn't take a couple of hours to do and shouldn't cost £200, which, well, it is our job to get them there.
And also people, whenever they see their chair, they say, it's lovely, I love the colour. What about all the layers of
But they're not going to know, definitely our job to let them know.
Exactly.
Absolutely, 100%. So on that score, what part of the skill and the craft would you most like to master?
I love the details.
Yeah.
I really do. I love stitching. And for my second year traditional piece, I made my own cord, made my own tassels. And I just loved all of that detail. And
I can see that. Yeah. So that whole sort of the stitching area, is there a direct comparison to what you were doing before with the stitching, or is it very different? I mean, I would imagine it's different, but
there are certain things which are similar. So sort of tailoring, fitting something to the form.
Yeah.
That's a way of pattern cutting
and
dressmaking. And hand stitching, hand finishing, I did do that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there are some overlaps, but generally, it's quite different.
Yeah. But equally different in nice ways, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Well, we're getting to the end of the podcast. And you know what part this is. So the desert island and your music, your book and your film. So tell me about that one.
Okay. Well, music was so hard. I love dancing.
Yes. Good.
And I've been, through the lockdown, I've been meeting up with my friends, doing playlists and dancing with them, just for fun. So if I was allowed to have a sort of mega mix, 2 hour long mega mix of all different genres and styles of dancing, that would be perfect.
Yeah.
If I'm only allowed one track.
Yeah.
Just trying to think about.
You could have an album, but it can't be a greatest hits. I'm being quite strict here. Get me.
I've got another option. So something that's going to have lots of different emotions in.
Yeah.
But still be able to be danced to.
Yeah.
I thought ballet.
Right. Okay.
So I'm going completely the opposite direction. Yeah. And something that would be quite crazy, Stravinsky, Firebird, or Rite of Spring.
Yeah. They're amazing pieces of music. Yeah.
Phenomenal. Yeah. Just completely mad.
For the time, I mean, they walked out of it, didn't it, when it was first performed in horror.
Yeah.
So fantastic.
Yeah. So probably Rite of Spring. Yeah. So I can express all my emotions on my own. For the book, a friend of mine's a poet, Penny Boxall. She's written a few poetry books. One of them is Ship on the Line.
Yeah.
So some of those poems are places that we've been to together in Oxford, or on projects that we've worked on together. We used to work together at the Ashmolean.
Okay.
And she's a dear, dear friend and very funny.
Yeah.
And it would just make me think of all my friends.
Which is nice.
So that would be the book I'd take. And then because I've got poetry and ballet to the film, I'm going to have to go proper lowbrow.
I'm glad to hear it because you've been far too intelligent.
I know, it's really to balance this out. I'm going to have to go for Team America.
Team America? I don't know that at all. It sounds terrible.
It's awful. It's puppets saving the world.
Oh, as puppets often do.
And it's the funniest thing ever. I love it.
Yeah. I'm going to just go back to the music because I love music and I'm just a bit... So if you weren't going to take Rite of Spring, what would be your other alternative to dance to? Because that's a really interesting... Because my perspective of dance is... possibly not the same with yours, which is why I'm asking.
Well, it's really hard. Like, went through the lockdown dance sessions, we've had ska, we've had rave, we've had disco, we've had like 80s pop.
So you are in the,
or anything, really. It's got to be good versions of that genre.
Yeah, totally. You know? Yeah. All righty. Brilliant. Well, I won't label you any more on the music side of things. Thanks for joining us. It's been a real pleasure to have you here. I hope you've all enjoyed the podcast today. If you have, please share it. If not, then don't. Okay, take care, guys. Speak to you soon. Bye-bye.